Welcome to the Animal Voices radio show here on 100.5 FM, Co-op Radio, CFRO in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. Today is Friday, November 16th, 2012. I am your host, Allison Cole, and I'm here today with my guest co-host, Jackie. Hi, Jackie.
Hi.
And Alyssa is away this week. Animal Voices is Vancouver's and Western Canada's only animal advocacy and vegan radio program, bringing you all the animal and vegan-related news, events, interviews, lifestyle, and commentary you need to keep up to date on what's happening both locally and internationally. We at Animal Voices encourage the movement toward a world in which animals are treated with compassion and mercy and are afforded the same rights that humans take for granted. This program can be heard every Friday from noon to 1 p.m. Pacific Standard Time and is also streamed live at coopradio.org and available as podcast on iTunes and animalvoices.org after airing. For our first interview today, we'll have for you an undercover animal cruelty investigator named David on the show to speak about the Ape Rescue Mission, which is a newly formed fundraising initiative with the goal of raising $50,000 to be able to send David to West Africa in early 2013 to conduct an investigation that will expose the illegal poaching and trafficking trade of chimpanzees and gorillas there for body parts. He will tell us about the illegal activities going on in West Africa and why effective enforcement must happen in order to make it stop. And for our feature interview today, we have for you Laura Maloney, who is the Chief Operating Officer of the Humane Society of the United States, as well as the incident commander of the major animal rescue efforts that have been conducted by the HSUS in the eastern United States in the aftermath of Hurricane Sandy. She'll be speaking with us about the work that they have been doing in the New Jersey and New York areas to rescue, shelter, and reunite animals with their guardians, as well as proactive steps to take for your non-human companions in the face of disaster. That interview is coming up in about 32 minutes, so please stay tuned for that. And now it's the moment that you've all been waiting for. It's time to draw for our five prizes in recognition of the Fall Member Drive, which happened here at Co-op Radio last month. Once again, we want to thank everyone who pledged their financial support to the station and to Animal Voices during the two-week fundraising drive. And as a token of appreciation, we said that we'll be doing a draw of five prizes for the generous people who donated. The prizes are a copy of the book Becoming Vegan by Vicente Molina and Brenda Davis, a copy of the cookbook The Inspired Vegan by Bryant Terry, two $10 gift certificates for the Raw Vegan restaurant Gorilla Food located in downtown Vancouver, and one $10 gift certificate for the Raw Vegan restaurant Eternal Abundance located on Commercial Drive. They're both awesome places to eat and two great books as well. So the winners are of our draw, and I've already pre-drawn them. They are Carl Loskin, congratulations, John Burgess, Jason Kara, Denise Swanson, and Harvey LaRochelle. Congratulations to all of our winners, and we will be contacting you shortly to ask you to choose and to claim your prizes. And remember, just because the fall fundraising drive is over now, it doesn't mean that we still don't need your support to keep the show going at Co-op Radio. If you wish to make a tax-deductible financial contribution in the name of Animal Voices, please go to coopradio.org where you can make a secure donation. Your support is always much appreciated. Thank you. And now I wanted to recommend a couple of vegan resource websites that I've come across lately. The first one is it's called The Vegan List, which can be found at www.theveganlist.com. This is a brand new site that seems to be the first of its kind acting as a comprehensive resource for all kinds of services, businesses, products, and information that is either run by vegans and or geared towards veganism. So, for example, the categories of potential listings on this site run the gamut from art and creative services such as musicians, photographers, and videographers, to food businesses, which includes grocery stores, private chefs, and commercial kitchen rentals, for example, to health services such as doctors, personal trainers, and nutritionists. And I know that from being in the vegan community for some time now, that there is a demand for information such as for vegan doctors and nutritionists. A lot of people have asked me about that in the past.
It's so rare in this area, especially.
Yeah, so if you have this online resource where you can look up vegan doctors, close to where you are, that is something that we need.
Very helpful.
Yeah, it's a great start to start pooling all this information together in one place. Other categories include household services such as plumbers, carpenters, and realtors, travel businesses such as bed and breakfast, hotels, and resorts, and professional services such as accounting, event planning, and lawyers. And there is even a category there for podcasts, and you'll find Animal Voices Vancouver listed there as a podcast. The service is free to use, and I actually just listed our show there a few nights ago. It was really easy. You just have to register a login name, and then it takes about 5 minutes or less to register your listing there. There are also lots of other categories listed on the site that I haven't even yet mentioned, and there will be an events listing category coming soon as well. So if you have a vegan business or organization of any kind, I recommend getting on there right away to start populating the site with information. It looks like the way it works is by people posting their own listings, and right now, because it has just started, there's not too much on there, so that's why I'm talking about it now, to encourage our listeners to get on theveganlist.com to post your vegan listing and to browse all the listings there. This is one site to keep bookmarked in your browser for sure. I really like the look and the functionality of it, and I think it's going to be a great resource to keep an eye out for in the future. Now, after finding out about the Vegan List site earlier this week, it reminded me of another vegan resource website or webpage actually that a friend of mine sent to me recently. This is from the website thevegantruth.blogspot.ca. It's a blog site, and it's actually just a blog post on the site, but a very informative one, which lists and describes over 100 vegan businesses around the world. It will take you quite some time to pore over the information there, which it obviously took a lot of time for someone to prepare that information too. I haven't even read through it all yet myself, but it's definitely worth reading through it if this is the kind of information that you want to know about the vegan businesses and services that are offered in your own backyard as well as throughout the rest of the world. And I would say that this would particularly come in handy when you're traveling. So if you want to know, I've noticed too that most of the businesses are in Canada, North America, as in the United States, the UK, and Australia. But there's lots and lots there. So if you want to know about vegan shops, restaurants, public relations firms, pet food suppliers, shoe and clothing stores, camps, there's even a camp, like a vegan camp there for kids that's
wow,
listed.
Wow, that's great.
Yeah, bakeries, catering and delivery services, wine cellars, bed and breakfast, food brands, body care brands, grocery stores, and vegan food trucks. And even if most of these businesses' physical locations aren't anywhere near you, they all have websites, and many of them sell their products on their webs. So it's definitely worth checking out on a rainy night when you have some time to peruse through these 100 listings. So the actual web link for this page is as follows, theveganruth.blogspot.ca/2012/10/100-vegan-business-around-world.html. And because that's a really long URL to remember, I've listed it on our website on the page for today's show, which you can easily find out at animalvoices.org. And I just want to invite our listeners, if you have any recommendations yourself of any vegan resource websites that you'd like to share, just go on to our Facebook page. You can share them there, Animal Voices Vancouver, or you can email us the details about them at radioanimalvoices@gmail.com.
Crafts for a Cause, the fifth annual craft fair to support social justice struggles. Saturday, December 1st from 6 to 10 p.m. at the RISM Cafe on East Broadway. Come shop for holiday gifts while supporting migrant rights, youth empowerment, climate change justice, indigenous autonomy, and more. Peruse socially conscious crafts by local artists and items created by local organizations to support their social justice work. RISM's delicious food and drink will be available for purchase throughout the evening. Crafts for a Cause, Saturday, December 1st at the RISM Cafe. Come shop for pottery, soaps, textiles, posters, clothing, paintings, buttons, patches, and more. Partial proceeds from artist sales are distributed to participating organizations. There is a suggested $2 donation at the door, but no one will be turned away. For more information, please visit www.coopradio.org.
You are listening to Animal Voices Radio Show here on 100.5 FM, CFRO Vancouver Cooperative Radio in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. And I have a couple important animal rights events coming up for you that I'm going to tell you a bit about. So we have Fur Free Friday at Winners on November 23rd. So with 213 stores Canada-wide, most Canadians have no idea that Winners is one of the largest, if not the largest, retailers of cheap, cruel, fur-trimmed products in the country. The problem is that many of the fur-trimmed garments are labeled as faux fur, so many people are buying such items unknowingly. This protest demonstration will take place at the Winners store at 798 Granville Street, and that's in Vancouver from 1 to 3 p.m. again on November 23rd. And also, the following day, Saturday, November 24th, from 11 to 1 p.m., the Taiji Dolphin Project will be having an event at the Vancouver Art Gallery at 750 Hornby Street in Vancouver. And this event is to protest the animal Taiji Dolphin Cull, as seen in the Academy Award-winning documentary The Cove, and the message is positive to Japan, let the dolphins live and be free. This is a worldwide event. People from all over the world will be speaking out on the same day. The activists will start at the Vancouver Art Gallery at 11 a.m. and then take a leisurely stroll past the Japanese Embassy building at 1075 West Pender Street, where they will gather outside to protest peacefully. The organizers' event invite everyone to come out and participate. This is an opportunity to make our voices be heard and mark the day that will encourage all media to Taiji to report live actively what is happening at the Cove. And then on the following day, Sunday, November 25th at 6 p.m., Liberation BC presents an outreach event at the Paul McCartney concert.
That's going to be fun, I think.
Yeah, I think that, yeah, that sounds like a really
Alyssa's
exciting...
Alyssa's going to that, so I want her to tell us about
yeah.
it. And I might go. I'll have to see about my time.
I'm looking forward to hearing about it. So that's actually at BC Place. So that's 777 Pacific Boulevard in Vancouver. Paul McCartney is going to be performing on November 25th, like I said. And since Paul is a longtime animal rights activist, which I think everyone knows, this is a perfect time to do some outreach to his fans. Volunteers will be meeting to hand out vegan outreach leaflets to a crowd of 52,000. So you'll be meeting at the Dunsmuir and Beattie entrance, known as the downtown entrance, of the Stadium Chinatown SkyTrain station at 6 p.m. and heading across the street to BC Place to welcome Paul and his fans with signs, costumes, and lots of leaflets. And here's a great quote from Paul McCartney that I think is... it's pretty straightforward. It just says, if slaughterhouses had glass walls, everyone would be vegetarians.
Yeah, he's really well known for that
yeah.
quote. And I don't know if he's correct about that, but I sure wish it was true.
Yeah, I think people may actually avoid even going near the slaughterhouses if they had
But it's
glass
hard.
Walls.
It's being harder
yeah.
and harder to avoid because it's coming exactly. to your television screens all the time now.
Exactly. And then on Sunday, December 2nd at 7:30, there's an evening called Veg Simplicity, Veg Diplomacy with vegan registered dietitian Vicento Molina, and that's at Eternal Abundance Restaurant at 1025 Commercial Drive in Vancouver, BC. So you'll join the staff at Eternal Abundance for an informative and tasty evening with well-known vegan dietitian and author Vicento Molina. So with the holidays approaching, it's especially important to learn easy, tasty ways to fit health-supportive foods into busy lives.
And if people were listening, one of our books was the one that one of the
exactly.
Vegan, we gave that we're giving that away.
Very lucky
this
winner.
Week.
So Vicento will help you come up with new simple ideas for nutritious breakfasts, lunches, dinners, and snacks on vegan and raw foods, and celebrate meals that everyone will enjoy, as well as consider how to navigate through the holiday season, basically without turkey and all those other non-vegan friendly options. So if you have an animal-friendly event that you would like to list on our show, please email us the details at radioanimalvoices@gmail.com or you can post it on our Facebook page, Animal Voices Vancouver.
Thanks for that, Jackie.
Yeah.
Today's first interview is with David, an experienced animal cruelty investigator who is working with a newly formed fundraising initiative called Ape Rescue Mission. Ape Rescue Mission for Africa was developed in response to the failure of conventional conservation methods to curb the escalation of animal trafficking in Equatorial Africa. Its goal is to raise funds to fill a well-established Great Ape Protection Group's open position of working in Africa and exposing horrendous and illegal cruelty inflicted on the great apes. If funded, David will be the undercover investigator sent to West Africa to fill this position. And he is here today to speak with us about this project. Hello, David, and welcome to the Animal Voices Radio Show.
Thank you so much for having me on your program.
Well, thank you for coming on the show today to speak with us about Ape Rescue Mission, which I only just first heard about last week. So please do tell us more about it. How did this initiative start? Where is it based? And please tell us a bit about the organization, the last great ape organization that you will be partnering with.
Right, yes. So I have been doing animal investigations for quite a number of years, and I just started thinking about another project. And I had always focused on domestic farm animal investigations and issues that were in North America. Originally, when I got involved in animal rights, it was focusing on lab animals, on primates, because I think when a lot of people get interested in animals, they do kind of attach themselves to ones that they can see themselves in, like the great apes and primates. But then I kind of confronted that own, you know, my own kind of attachment to them and said, well, if it's so easy to care about these primates, I want to look towards other animals such as, you know, chickens and pigs and ones that are not being focused on at that time, back in the 90s.
Mm-hmm.
And so I kind of diverted from my initial interest. And then just last year, I started reading articles just about the incredible plight of these bonobos, the gorillas, and the chimpanzees in West Africa. And how, predictions are that within another generation, there are some populations that will simply be gone. And I thought I really wanted to make this, hopefully it's not a final last-ditch effort, but it's just something in me just really has compelled me to take on this project.
So let's move on. I wanted to learn more about the issues facing the great apes in West Africa with regards to poaching, smuggling, and the illegal animal parts trade. What should our listeners know about this criminal industry and practice for purely profits with no concern whatsoever for the animals involved?
Yeah, and well, I think that it's really important to know that this is a huge industry. It's about a $10 billion industry worldwide. So the problem begins in the forests of Africa with poachers, but it's a global demand for these products that are really kind of stripping the jungles of the great apes. So you have apes that are being killed for bushmeat that are eaten locally by people in villages and then in the cities as well. There's also the pet trade, so a baby gorilla can be sold in Asia for $50,000. Baby chimpanzees are showing up in Chinese zoos. And so it's a multitude of economies that are coming out of this. And the other point is that if you have, you know, a single baby chimpanzee that might have been smuggled out of Africa for a zoo, that means that about 10 other chimpanzees will have been killed for that infant to have been removed from the family group because they're so protective of their infants. So it's kind of these compounding problems that are really make it such a, you know, a huge, huge problem.
So it's already illegal for this poaching to be happening in West Africa, as I understand, but these laws aren't being enforced. So what is the law enforcement environment like in this area, and how does the organization that you'll be working with, LAGA, play a role in enforcing these laws?
Yeah, and I hope I don't paint too grim a picture, but these are some of the most corrupt countries in the world.
Right.
Bribes are just commonplace. The bureaucracy kind of functions on a system of bribery and corruption. And so what LAGA has really kind of put in place is almost like a stewardship, so that when LAGA conducts an investigation, they're doing the undercover work, which I would be participating in, and then they're also shadowing the police officers who would go and arrest the poacher or smuggler, and then also following up with lawyers who would present the evidence in court and aid in the prosecution, and then also monitor the sentencing of the individual, because it's very common for someone to be arrested and then go to trial the next day or the next week and then suddenly disappear from the prison simply because you know, one of their other cohorts showed up and paid a bribe. And in countries where, you know, it's incredibly poor, people are desperate for money, this just, it's so easy to sway the judicial system. So LAGA has instituted this very structured program so that these criminals are for once treated as criminals and do pay fines, serve sentences. The record now is one poacher or animal trafficker per week being arrested and being sentenced. And, you know, the fines are being collected. They have a very kind of measurable system so that people who are donating money can actually track the results. You know, another thing that really attracted me to LAGA was that you can go onto their website and look at the monthly reports and see the results each month, which is very different from some of the other conservation groups in the area where it's more of a focus on studies and creating protected zones in these areas where there are great apes. The problem with that model is that poachers and traffickers, criminals, they don't care about designated protected areas. So I think LAGA has the right model to start making an impact in West Africa.
Well, the fundraising goal to send you to West Africa as an investigator is $50,000. Can you talk about what expenses this sum will go towards, and what will you be doing there exactly, and for how long?
Right, yes. So the project will be a year to begin with, and then hopefully it extends beyond that. It is a very expensive area to operate in. Mm-hmm. You know, flights over there are very expensive. It's, you know, $2,000 just to fly there. Living expenses, food is very expensive. Rent is very expensive, even though these are third world countries. Mm-hmm. Medical insurance, which
right,
I just had to go through the other day, is very expensive. So all of this kind of adds up, and this is not a salary for myself. There's no portion of the budget that's going purely as a salary. It's all material support, and each month we're publishing the exact dollar amounts for the donations in terms of medical insurance, the travel tickets, the camera equipment, which is the most expensive segment of that budget, and it's all published on our website and on our Facebook page at Facebook Ape Rescue Mission, and on our aperescuemission.tumblr.com, so people can actually see the breakdown of the budget and know which you know, which things that they would want to support.
Yeah, I like that about your project too. It's not just an arbitrary number. It's listing exactly this is what we need. And, for example, you mentioned video equipment. That's obviously going to be a very important part of your investigation, I would imagine.
Yeah, people always like to know where their money's going.
Absolutely, yeah. And it's a huge logistical undertaking, which takes up hours every day. It's incredible, just the you know, travel within the country. There's almost no you know, support within the country. I mean, to fly someplace, you know, on a plane, it's $6,000 if we want to travel from the capital city to a remote area to do surveys of the gorilla populations up there. So just those kind of day-to-day expenses are very high simply because there isn't an infrastructure within West Africa. So, you know, equipment, the humidity that I have to prepare for in terms of protecting the electronics and insuring them and all of that, it's really adding up. And it's and again, people can analyze the budget and they can look at all of the items, and we've broken it down. So if people only want to donate for very specific things, they can do that as well and know that the money is not just going for a salary or for renting an office space or anything like that. It directly puts me in the field and purchases computers and gear for the other people as well who are working in the field.
So please do tell us how people can donate to this project.
Yes, so we have a Facebook page, which is facebook.com/ApeRescueMission. We also have a blog, which is aperescuemission.tumblr.com, and that has all the detailed postings on the budget and the day-to-day updates. And so we are using a website called Fundly, which manages the donations. So if people click on the donate button on our webpage, it goes to a secure form where they can donate through using their credit card in any amount. That's, you know, anything that that someone might want to give is fine. We're also going to be at the Los Angeles Green Convention this weekend, which is the 17th and 18th in Los Angeles. And we'll be meeting with people kind of face-to-face so that, you know, people can ask questions and give donations in person as well. You know, this is kind of the first step, and it's often the I hate asking people for money, but it's what makes these projects a reality. So it is something that we need to do, and hopefully people see the value in this.
And that's why we have you here on the show today, to show people the value of exactly what this money is going towards and why. So thank you for coming on the show today, David, to speak with us about the Ape Rescue Mission and the issues surrounding the endangered great apes in West Africa. Once again, to find out more about this project, please visit Ape Rescue Mission's website at aperescuemission.tumblr.com, and you can like their Facebook page, Ape Rescue Mission. Thanks so much, David.
Thank
and
you.
I wish you luck.
Thank you very much, Ian.
So you are listening to Animal Voices Radio Show here on 100.5 FM CFRO Vancouver Cooperative Radio in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. And I have some news to tell you guys about. So I'm not sure how many of you have heard about Clover the Spirit Bear. That's in kind of the Kootenays area of Kamloops. So a debate over the fate of Clover, a rare spirit bear put in the zoo by the British Columbia government, is becoming international in scope. Ian McAllister, founding director of Pacific Wild, said his environmental organization is getting a steady stream of correspondence from people outside Canada who want the bear freed. We have had emails from US, Germany, and Switzerland, and a few other international correspondents, he said in a note Thursday from his home on remote Denny Island on BC's central coast. Mr. McAllister, an author and photographer whose books on bears and wolves have helped make the Great Bear Rainforest world famous, has written to the BC Environmental Minister, Terry Lake, urging him to give Clover another chance. We believe this bear has not been given adequate opportunity to be released back into the wild, away from human garbage and harassment. Furthermore, allowing this bear, a rare and iconic symbol of our province, to be exploited for profit due to the reported negligence of individuals is absolutely unacceptable, especially when an alternative exists, Mr. McAllister wrote. Clover was picked up as an orphan last year near Smithers, BC, after spending the winter in Northern Lights Wildlife Shelter. The bear was released, but 3 months later, he broke into a camp shelter looking for food and was trapped by BC conservation officers. So Glenn Grant, who's a general manager of the BC Wildlife Park, says Clover is habituated to humans now and can't be released because he will get back into trouble. However, to date, there is no scientific proof that shows that bear rehab and release is a successful option. However, Mr. McAllister says that there are wild places in the Great Bear Rainforest where there is little chance Clover would ever come into conflict with people. Prince Royal Island, Gribble Island, or one of the adjacent mainland systems, all of which are separated by water from human camps and habitation, would work well, says Mr. McAllister. And these locations do remain part of the same Komodo gene pool and give the rich bear habitat associated with them. We believe clover would stand an excellent chance of survival in the wild. So Mr. McAllister again says that his group could raise the funds needed to keep clover over winter and to move him to release site next spring. So this is obviously a very important issue because we only have 400 of these spirit bears left in the wild, under 400. So, you know, it's obviously nearing extinction, so we need to keep as many in the wild as we can and not be putting these animals in zoos. And on another news topic, this one is a report from PETA, and it's regarding a death of a trainer at Bozeman Exhibitors Compound. And so PETA has sent a formal complaint to the U.S. Occupational Health and Safety Administration saying that these bears essentially were not kept in proper confinement with proper enrichment, and the trainer was put at risk by his employer.
What bears were these? I didn't get that.
It was grizzly bear, and this was in Montana. Okay. So yeah, it was just not adequate. An adequate life for those bears, obviously.
Were they being enclosed? I didn't.
They were in an enclosure, exactly. And then the trainer, it says, was not following the proper occupational health and safety guidelines.
So when you say trainer, it sounds like the bear was in entertainment industry.
Exactly. The bear was part of a group. Let me just see here. Yeah, it was part of a group that basically sells animals for Hollywood acts and similar type things. And on a related topic, there were caged wolves at a Twilight premiere party that just happened
this
weekend.
Crazy.
It was insane. And, you know, obviously everyone that went there and saw
that. I
think
that was probably at the big LA one.
Exactly.
I can't imagine them doing it for any other one, because I know that happened this past week.
Yeah, people were horrified and shocked. And
was PETA there?
PETA has a report on it, and that's actually where I got the information from.
Okay.
But yeah, it's horrible to be keeping three wolves in a small cage for people to get their photos with just for the entertainment purpose and exploitation.
That's crazy. Well, thank you so much for the news there, Jackie. Today's feature interview is with Laura Maloney, who is the Chief Operating Officer of the Humane Society of the United States. She was also the incident commander in the Humane Society's significant efforts to rescue animals in the aftermath of Hurricane Sandy, which wreaked havoc in the New Jersey and New York areas of the eastern United States just weeks ago. The HSUS has rescued more than 250 animals from devastated areas, and they are now caring for more than 480 animals in three emergency shelters, helping to relieve families as they begin to rebuild their lives. Laura is here to speak with us today about the Humane Society's ongoing efforts in this area and how to care for your companion animals in the face of disaster. Hello, Laura, and welcome to the Animal Voices Show.
Well, hello, and thanks for having me.
Yes, thank you so much for coming on the show today to speak with us about Humane Society's work in the aftermath of Hurricane Sandy. We are so fortunate here on the West Coast to never really fall victim to such types of disasters, and I am always seeing in the news this kind of things happening in other parts of the world, including the United States, but it doesn't mean that it can't happen in your own backyard. It doesn't mean that it can't happen here on the West Coast, and I feel that being aware of the issues and being as prepared as possible for these situations, especially when it comes to caring for your companion animals, is of the utmost importance. So thanks again for coming on the show. Hurricane Sandy is just one example of a disaster relief mission that HSUS has been involved with in rescuing animals. Can you start by describing to us what type of damage was produced by the hurricane with regards to people's homes, and how severe was it?
You know, it definitely, for those people that were impacted the most, the severity was intense. You know, they've lost everything they own. So the water came through, it was many feet high into their house. I was in one of them last weekend where just, 7 feet high, and it sat there for a bit of time, but it wasn't unlike Hurricane Katrina. It didn't sit there for weeks. The water started to go out. But I also was responsible for animal rescue at Hurricane Katrina. And so at the time, I was the CEO of the Louisiana SPCA, which mm-hmm. was headquartered in New Orleans. So I certainly know that, you know, the impact in New Orleans and the impact in New Jersey and New York, and regardless of where you are, when you've lost everything, you know, the impact is incredibly intense. And we really feel for everyone who was there. And what is strange is when you go there in these really impacted areas, just a few miles out, you know, it could look like life is back to normal. But then in those affected areas, you know, those people's lives have been changed forever.
All right, and I have another question for you. So when such a disaster strikes a community and people's homes, what are typically the immediate consequences for these people? Are they instructed to leave the premises right away? Do they have a choice? And how do their companion animals fit into this and whatever resources are available to them for shelter? I wonder if you could paint a picture for our listeners and myself on what realities a situation like this may exactly entail when it's happening to you.
Yeah. Well, you know, I think it depends on the situation. And in some cases, people evacuated sooner. So those people, you know, that made plans, you know, they would have taken their pets with them if they had the ability and gone to friends or gone to a hotel or, you know, that kind of thing. But other times, many people don't really expect it to happen. Or they said, you know, I've been through many hurricanes.
They think it won't happen to them.
It's not going to happen to me. So I'm going to just hunker down and stay here. And, you know, one of the families that we talked to, they stayed with their family, and they never expected it to happen. And then officials came up to them and ordered them to evacuate. And so when you're ordered to evacuate, you don't have much time. You know, you may have an hour, if that. You know, or they just come up to you and say, you need to leave right now. Get in this boat. Get in this car. We're leaving. And generally, it's in those cases where people will have a tendency to leave their animals behind because they are a bit in crisis. They're not sure what to do, and they look at their pet, and then they look at the boat, and then they're saying, you know, well, I'm only going to be gone a few days, and the damage isn't going to be that bad. And then when you put if you have a two-story home or a three-story home, you know, you may put your animals on that second and third story. So this one family, they were, you know, ordered to evacuate, but they stayed for Hurricane Irene, and they only expected to be gone for a couple of days. So they put food and litter upstairs for their two cats, and then their cats were named Bonnie and Clyde. And they said, well, we'll be back. You know, and then it turns out that it was 10 days had passed.
Oh, my goodness.
And they weren't able to get back. So then they called the hotline we set up in New Jersey to say, you know, we have our cats. It's been 10 days. Can you go and either check on them, get them? You know, I think they must have known that their house, they were hoping anyway, that their house wasn't gone. I think they had heard that their house was standing.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't like one of those that was completely demolished, but they weren't sure. So they called our hotline. We went out, and they gave us a lot of information about their cats and saying one's very, very shy. But our team went in, found the shy one and the other cat, and then took, you know, gave us some photos, and we went in and got them, and then we gave them, and they have since been reunited. But in some of the feelings that come with that is incredible guilt, if you can imagine, you know, because you love your pets, and you're not thinking.
People just aren't prepared, I think, too, is they just don't, they just, as you said, they don't know what to do. So that's why I have you here on the show today, to get people to start thinking about this thing and start realizing that, yeah, it can happen to you. It's happening to other people and other parts of the world, especially the United States. So, I wonder if you can maybe go into specifically with Hurricane Sandy with regards to the work that you've been doing there. You've been doing search and rescue of stranded pets and sheltering them and then reuniting them with their guardians. If you can talk a bit about that specifically in the past few weeks.
Yeah, no, definitely. So we set up, you know, right when the storm was happening, we, you know, lessons learned from Hurricane Katrina when I was right there on the front lines from the very beginning. said, you know, if this ever happens again, we need an 800 number rescue line.
Right.
So we set up a, we worked with the Governor Christie's administration in New Jersey and established a 24-hour pet rescue hotline. And so we, people knew this was the one place they could call anything pet. This is the number to call. And then we would dispatch throughout the state of New Jersey. We also manned the New York City hotline in that first week when they were having animals that were in critical need. And we probably did it actually probably more like a couple of weeks. And then we established one rescue there for some animals in Staten Island, and we were there all the time to help them as well. And then we set up three shelters. And so we've set up two shelters in New Jersey. One was from Ocean County and one was in Monmouth County. And those are the two shelters that, that's where the area most impacted was, kind of in that region along the coast of New Jersey. So we would go out, rescue the animals, and bring them back to that shelter and set them up and get them comfortable. And continued search and rescue operations until last week or earlier this week, when they have now ceased and we're now moving to sheltering only. And then we also have a shelter that we're working with in Nassau County, New York, and that's a co-located shelter. So you'll hear that terminology now, and that's something you did not see during Hurricane Katrina, were these human shelters that pets were also could also live. So you see those more in Sandy response than you did in Katrina, but there's often not enough of them. You know, so if people can prepare and have ready for them, you know, friends and family that might be able to take them in, that's certainly ideal. But if you have to go to a shelter and generally you're one of these that were kind of ordered to evacuate and you were planning to stay, then many of them now will allow you to bring their pets. And so we help on the animal side while there's some other people helping on the human side. But the goal of that is that people are much better, and as you know from your show, you know, the blood pressure's reduced and people
they need their
are
family just, members with them.
Absolutely. So people want to be, it may not be ideal, but people want to know that their pets are being
I think it actually is ideal. You need to have your family with you when especially when you're under such trauma as it is, right? And you know, animals are even traumatized even more so, right? They don't really know what's going on. I wonder if you can share with us a story or two about animals that you have rescued who have been reunited with their guardians already. What is it like to reunite an animal with his or her family?
That is the absolute
I've seen lots
part.
Of photos on your Facebook page actually last night, which was the HSUS Facebook page. It's really wonderful.
Oh, thank you. No, that is the best part, you know. And part of the stress of doing this work is you see the trauma, you see all of that, and knowing that reunions happen are just so joyous, really. You know, there's so many stories, and certainly on our website, on humanesociety.org, you can read some of those stories, and people think that they've lost their pets forever, or, you know, they've lost everything that they own, and then they don't know where their pet is, or they weren't sure what happened to them. To bring them back together, mm-hmm. and then what we were talking about earlier is the guilt people feel, mm-hmm. you know, that their animal is safe. It's because they love their pet. It's not that they wanted to leave their pet. So one of the animals, the stories was in Staten Island, New York, which you probably have seen on the news. It really suffered extensive damage. And this distraught woman who had left her pets behind, one was an 80-pound dog, and another dog and a cat. And she called, you know, she had to evacuate, one of those really quick evacuations. They weren't expecting this to happen, particularly in New York City. You don't think of that. And her home was severely damaged. And they were concerned also that about gas leaks, and but nobody would go into her home because she had a large dog named Bear that was there. And the dog was mm-hmm. barking a lot, was very, really, and you've seen this, I'm sure, too, is when dogs are fearful, they're barking out of fear,
yes,
not because
yeah.
they're aggressive. And so this dog, you know, life was not normal for this dog. And so we went out and deployed, and we went with 12 police officers, firefighters, if you can imagine. It was quite a,
yeah.
there was 12 of them there
wow.
because of the gas leak. And so we went in, and they were, the human rescue teams were very afraid because they saw this giant 80-pound dog. And when we went in and our team got the dog and went back in the car, the dog was just so relieved to see people. and actually was immediately calmed. And then we took the dog to the human shelter where she was located, and then reunited them. And just tears, as you can imagine. And another another interesting, we have had so many really great stories, but one guy was, you know, thought he lost his cats and whatnot. He came, and not only did we get his cats, but we got his goldfish too. Mm-hmm. And so we had his goldfish and his cats, and he was just absolutely beside himself, you know, in tears. And then another little story, and I could go on, but I won't.
Let's just do a whole show of rescue stories.
I've had a bird named Baby, a little parakeet, and a similar situation in that she didn't know about our hotline. She had been calling around to the local groups, but of course local groups are impacted, so they don't have phones. Their phones aren't working and that kind of thing. And then she later found out about the hotline and called our hotline, and so we immediately dispatched our team there. And they went, and Baby was still there despite the cold. It was very cold outside. And our team snapped a photo on the phone, on their phone, and then they texted the mother of this little girl who was so concerned about her baby parakeet. And then they just took the parakeet immediately to her in a shelter, and or I'm not sure if she's in shelter. She could have been at a friend's home. And immediately, and then, of course, there's tears and, you know, so excited. So that's really the great happy stories.
Well, that's great to know. I guess on the flip side, what are some common mistakes that you see made when it comes to how companion animals are dealt with by their guardians in the face of disaster? And do you think that there is any kind of component, be it educational or the way that animals are dealt with from our preparedness system, that could be made better?
Yeah, I guess a couple of things. The things that can be made better are, I think the human rescue teams and the animal rescue teams should practice together.
I was just going to say that, be cohesive.
Yeah. Yes, absolutely. You know, each does their own
thing. You can't just
go
rescue the human and not take their animal. That's just not right.
Yeah, and we've seen more human rescuers. I've been really impressed with how many rescue people have taken pets. And I think the more we practice together, particularly in these catastrophic issues, I think it'll be easier for everyone just to go through. And there are times when animals, you know, particularly if they're fearful, we don't want to see someone get bit, and, you know, the animal handlers know how to do that. And we wouldn't want the human rescue people to be injured. And so I think we can partner together on some, particularly also if you're talking about horse rescue and some things where animals, you know, are very afraid and may thrash. We want to be able to partner together. So I think we could do that. And then also for individuals, you know, being mindful of not tying their pet up. You know, I think there's a natural tendency to, I'm going to tie my pet so in case something happens, they're, you know, restrained.
I think
confined.
That's super dangerous. And I think I read on your website, too, you want them to be alert and being mobile so that they can use their survival instincts when such a situation happens. Sometimes, actually, your animals will have a better chance of surviving than you will, right?
Absolutely. And certainly we see cats are quite, you know, amazingly resilient.
Yeah, of course. Cats can get anywhere. Yeah.
Yeah, you see that the water's coming. They can go into high places. Dogs harder.
Dogs can swim.
Yeah, but they can swim, exactly. And they also are, you know, that instinct that you were just referring to. You know, they do things that we may not think about as a human mind, but they are able to do it. So definitely, you know, of not tying your animal up. But, you know, hopefully, if at all possible, to think about making plans in advance. And so if a storm is coming or you think something's coming, you may not have that as much on the West Coast, but, you know, making plans at the hotel, calling, having those things mapped out, pet-friendly hotels that you may be able to go to, or friends, you know, having those kind of agreements up front. You know, if something happens, can I come with you with my family? And then just thinking about having a crate ready and some of those things that people may say, well, you could bring your dog or your cat, but, you know, could you have them in a crate? I'm afraid of them, or I'm allergic, or whatever. But, you know, think about those kinds of things in advance, and I think people will be far better off, and you won't feel as stressed. So you'd have a kit handy, ready to go. So if something terrible happens, you don't have to think about it. Like, what am I going to do? It's already thought about for you. And have this little kit you know, you could just, your disaster kit, pull it right out, have all your materials already in there. And something else I think people have a tendency or something to think about is they might think about boarding their pet in a veterinary clinic, for example. But if that veterinary clinic is impacted in the storm, that would be something, you know, to keep in mind, if, particularly if you're in an area that is affected by hurricanes. You know, you want to go to a place and board that's not necessarily in a hurricane, and that's one of the affected places. So there's probably a lot of little things, and on our website there are some information we have there that you can go and helps you think about what should I include in my kit, and regardless of whatever issue may be affecting you, just having something ready to go would be a great help.
And I just want to mention that I've put a link to that site on our website as well, just so it's handy for our listeners as well. Finally, what can our listeners do to help the animals affected by Hurricane Sandy and just in general with regards to volunteering in the future for animal disaster relief?
Oh, well, thank you for asking. You know, we have a disaster relief fund, and we certainly always welcome support of that, and we, you know, help. That's what really funds us and enables us to do this kind of work. We're sheltering animals in New Jersey, up to 500 through, and New York, okay, through, definitely through the end of November, mm-hmm, and are helping set up a long-term foster program in New Jersey with the St. Hubert's Animal Welfare Center, which is a local group, and we're helping them with the funding. So, because otherwise it's something that they wouldn't have the funding for. And so that's what these disaster relief funds are for, is to help us then grant to local organizations as well as our own to do the work, but also help others. And so we're going to be helping St. Hubert's and other groups, you know, that have been impacted in one way or the other. We're helping them as well. So you can just go to our website. People can donate right on there, and they can specify that they would like it to go to the disaster relief fund, and that money is then restricted for that purpose. So that's always a great way. You can also sign up to be a volunteer, International Volunteer Center, which you can do at our website as well. And then there's a number of trainings that you would go through, and it does require specialized training to do this kind of work, because you're dealing with, you know, sometimes dangerous situations, or, you know, there's live wires on the ground, and you just need to know how to navigate and manage some of those things. But we would love to invite people to volunteer, and I would love to include people in our deployments.
Well, thank you so much for coming on the show today, Laura, to speak with us about your work in animal rescue in the face of disaster. And thank you for the work that you've been doing to rescue these animals. To find out more about the Humane Society's work for the animals, including the work that they have been doing just recently for the animals after Hurricane Sandy, please visit their website at www.humanesociety.org. Thanks again. Take care.
Thank you so much. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
So you have been listening to the Animal Voices radio show on 100.5 FM Co-op Radio in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. So next week we'll have some special programming in honor of the International Day for the Elimination of Violence Against Women.
And Alyssa's back next
week.
Yeah. Can't wait.
It's exciting. So that's on November 25th, next Friday. So we will feature an interview with Phil Arco about the connections between woman battering and animal abuse. Phil Arco is an internationally acclaimed lecturer, author, and humane educator who chairs the Latham Foundation of Animal Abuse and Family Violence Protection Project. So we here at Animal Voices Show modestly ask you to keep connected with the Animal Voices via the World Wide Web. You can do so by signing up for our Facebook page, Animal Voices Vancouver, and join us on Twitter at Animal Voices YVR. And please do send us your suggestions and comments about the show, either on Facebook or via email at radioanimalvoices@gmail.com. Also, please do check out our website, animalvoices.org, where shows can also be downloaded. And if you appreciate the work that we do here every week at Animal Voices to bring you original, quality programming on the topic of current animal issues and the vegan lifestyle, please show us your support by making a donation to us at Animal Voices, to Animal Voices at Co-op Radio, because we do rely on your donations to keep the show on the air. To make a donation of $5, $10, $20, whatever you can afford, simply go to cooperadio.org and click on Donate Now. And remember to indicate on your donation that it's going towards Animal Voices. And if you're in Canada and make a donation of at least $25, Your donations are tax deductible, as well any donation online is tax deductible. Stay tuned for Radio Eco Shop with Alex Smith, and thanks so much for listening to Animal Voices today, and remember to be kind to the animals.
And just a note about the song that we're leaving with, it's called Interstellar by Grooveworks from the film Rise of the Planet of the Apes.